Chapter 43. Rumataka was a dusty planet that had very little going for it. There was a small mining operation to the south, a refinery on site, and irrigation farms to the north. The spaceport was located near a small town. When Jin landed, she inquired about any nearby junkers.
"Looks like a good little shuttle,"
the junker, a male Labo, said, eyeing it.
"What's wrong with it?"
His long ears twitched, the flaps brushing his shoulders.
"It'd be better off as parts," Jin said. "And the ident code isn't original."
The junker eyed Jin, then scanned the ship's codes. Jin's work was good, and in general, the ship would pass any clearance. But there was already an alert out for it.
"Reckon I could keep this in storage for a bit," the junker said, "until things are a little calmed down."
"Good plan," Jin replied.
They settled on a price and Jin cashed out. She could have earned more, but it was evident that she had to sell fast. She went right back to the spaceport. She bought passage on an interplanetary transport unit and disembarked on Ukaneo a few weeks later. From there, she picked up odd jobs, moving between the planets in the system whenever she got antsy. As soon as possible, Jin took a job on a freighter leaving the five-point system.
Between Commander Solange and Alejandro Pessoa, she had no reason to stay and every reason to leave.
Time and distance blended together as Jin crisscrossed the galaxy. Sometimes, she thought about how much Hatter would have liked this life, seeing new planets from the viewports of different ships. But usually, she tried not to think about him at all. Instead, she pretended to be the starbird she had heard about on Inusagi, the one that turned to stardust and spread across the galaxy. It didn't matter who she was, as long as she wasn't Jin Erso. She picked up a code name, Liana Halleck, and created scan docs for the new ident that were so good they passed more than one Imperial inspection. She just hoped they were good enough to get her through the five-point system unnoticed, when she returned there several years later. Jin docked at Rumataka with the intention of reaching out to a splicer she'd met before leaving the system. She needed credits after a run of bad luck, but instead of her contact, she ran into the old junker.
"Hey,"
he called, crossing the small spaceport to where she stood.
"It's been a while."
Jin frowned, trying to add up the time. She was in her early 20s now, she supposed. She was surprised the Labo remembered her.
"Sold that ship of yours," the junker continued, pulling up a chair. "Made a good price. Might have some work for you if you're interested."
She shrugged. She'd learned that lesson from her travels. Never appear eager. The Labo offered to discuss the finer points in the small cantina down the road, and Jin allowed him to buy her a drink. When they were seated, the junker said,
"Got some interest in the kind of codes you make."
Jin closed her eyes and allowed herself one wistful moment of recalling who she had been before she went to seedy cantinas to haggle with dishonest skills. She could still remember when her life had been normal and good.
"No,"
she thought viciously, excising the memories.
"That's not what I get. I don't get normal. I don't deserve good.
Everything good dies." All she needed now was credits.
"How much interest?" Jin asked the junker.
He told her his plan, and it was smart. If the ident codes and ship docks she forged were sold through the Labo, her name wouldn't be directly attached. It provided her with separation, although it did mean less payment.
"I've got a group. They need past checkpoints. Want some manifests and logs that look a little more mediocre,"
the junker continued.
"I could do that," Jin drained her glass.
"How much?"
This was the right thing to say. The junker wasn't keen on small talk and preferred business. They quickly hashed out a payment plan and work schedule.
"I don't even know your name," Jin commented.
It was her second dealing with the Labo, and it had only just struck her as odd.
"Reese Amps," he said. "You?"
Liana Halleck. The lie came easily. She hardly ever thought of herself as an Urso anymore. And it hurt too much to think of the name Ponta. The work Reese provided was simple enough, although time-consuming and tedious. Jin kept careful tabs on her credits. She could eke out a better-than-average living with the illegal work. And she had her eye set on going deeper into the Outer Rim and leaving behind 5 points. Commander Solange may have been an inept and corrupt officer, but she was still an Imperial presence on the space station. Far too close for Jin's comfort. So Jin checked every ship that came into the spaceport, hoping each time to find someone who was keen on leaving the system behind. She didn't find anyone. The holodramas she'd viewed as a kid implied that the Outer Rim was a constant source of adventures, new species to discover, strange new landscapes, and exciting exploits on ships that darted through the systems. Instead, Jin spent her days in the little border room she rented on Rumataka, hunched over a code replicator.
That feeling of missing out, of making the wrong choice for her life by accepting this job, was strongest late at night, when Jin carefully crafted ship logs for Reese. Taking out damage reports from space battles and adding in cleared Imperial checkpoints or boring trade route runs.
As she examined the records and altered them, Jin grew certain that Reese was being paid by a subversive partisan group. Probably not the growing group of rebels that Zosad and Idrissa had joined. This one seemed smaller. A fleet of no more than 6 ships, she guessed. None of which was a shuttle like the one Saw had flown, or a Y-wing like she'd seen on school. Jin traced the outline of a Y-wing in the dust on the table she was working at in her little dormer. What would life have been like if Saw hadn't been so isolated on Re? If he had followed Zosad and Idrissa into the rebel group? He wouldn't have taken that job on Inusagi, the one that still woke her up with nightmares sometimes. She might have met Hatter not on school, but on some rebel base on some far-flung planet. Because if it wasn't for Jin, Hatter would have joined Zosad's group. And he would have still been alive. She didn't like having a name for the feeling that had been plaguing her for so many months now. Regret. She swiped her hand across her doodled Y-wing. The only regret she had was ever coming across groups like Saw's, like Zosad's, like this one. Whatever they were doing now, these runs she was wiping from the manifests, the codes she was forging to get past blockades. Jin was not so naive as to believe that they were helping anyone but their own entitled sense of justice. In the end, she didn't care. As long as she got paid, as long as she was safe, as long as she could eat, that was all she cared about. That night, a loud knock on the front door of the old house Jin was boarding in was so persistent that Jin startled awake, even though she was on the second story. Her landlady cursed a blue streak as she clomped down the stairs to answer the door. Jin sat up in bed, straining to hear what was being said. Her landlady was loud, protesting that someone shouldn't come in. And then, Jin heard the boots. She was certain she would always be able to identify a stormtrooper just by the sound his boots made. She shot out of bed and went straight to her code replicator. She wiped the data as quickly as she could. It wasn't a perfect job, but it was something. All the logs and scan docs she'd been working on for the past few days were gone. She could recreate the work, but... Her bedroom door swung open. Jin grabbed the scarf she'd taken off earlier and threw it around her neck and hair. She hoped she looked as if she were being modest in her low-cut top, and not that she was hiding her kyber crystal necklace.
"Tanith Ponta," the stormtrooper said.
Jin turned slowly.
"I told you, her name is Liana Halleck, not Tanith whatever," the landlady shouted. "This is a violation of privacy."
"You're wanted for questioning," the stormtrooper said.
"Am I being arrested?" Jin asked. The landlady stared at her, as if it had only just occurred to her that Jin could have lied about her name.
No,
the stormtrooper said.
Do I have a choice on whether or not I come with you?
Jin asked.
No,
the stormtrooper said.
Can I at least get dressed first?
The stormtrooper hesitated.
It's cold outside,
Jin said, looking down at her bare arms and legs.
You may dress,
the stormtrooper said, but he didn't leave the doorway. He watched as Jin awkwardly stepped into pants without removing her shorts and layered another shirt under a heavier coat. She shoved her feet into her boots and stood awkwardly.
Don't rent my room out, Jin told her landlady. I'm coming back.
The older woman nodded vigorously, and Jin hoped she would be honest enough not to loot the credits Jin had hidden under the mattress. The stormtrooper led Jin to the spaceport. Reese Amps sat on the ground, his back against the wall, his hands held in heavy Durasteel locks. He looked up at Jin with watery eyes as the stormtrooper pushed her forward. The guards on Reese yanked him to a standing position. It did not bode well that Reese had been arrested. He had been her go-between for the codes and logs and docs she forged for what was obviously a rebel group. While Jin could reasonably protest that she didn't know she'd been working for partisans, she couldn't deny that her actions, forgery, were illegal. She wasn't sure why Reese had been arrested and not her, but she couldn't help feeling nervous as the stormtrooper escorted her into an Imperial transport ship and they headed back to Five Points Station.